Generally speaking, during this shiur, we discuss things, piskei halacha, which had an influence historically, things which we may not even realize that we are implementing in our daily lives. Tonight will be different in that we will be discussing very recent piskei halacha from Rav Belsky, Zichron Levracha, who was just nifter, and piskei halacha during which show how much of a trailblazer he was, how much willing he was to go against the fold in certain scenarios, and things which, whether we know it or not, could be very often we are relying upon, things which are very relevant to our lives nowadays. So who was Rav Belsky? Okay, Belsky, we don't have to discuss much about his biography, because we know the society that he was raised in. He was raised in America, in New York already. He was a tremendously brilliant person by all accounts. He mastered all different disciplines. He mastered in terms of secular disciplines, in terms of Torah. He was obviously a tremendous Talmud Chacham. He had a master because of his knowledge in the sciences and in the mathematics, so he was able to master certain parts of halacha, which are became like a meis mitzvah in recent times. For instance, very few people nowadays, it used to be that every rav in Europe had to know hilchos treifas. The sheikhet would bring a chicken to you, you have to check, is it a treif or not? Now, it's very rare to find a rav who's very familiar with hilchos treifas. Rav Belsky still mastered hilchos treifas and was the teacher of many people who learned hilchos treifas. They often went to him because he was the only person who knew the anatomy and was able to combine that with the halacha. That's one example. Another example is all the halachas of Iber HaChodesh and Kiddush HaChodesh, which obviously gets very involved in different mathematical equations. So he was also very well versed, obviously, and also became a tremendous expert and bucky in those areas as well. So many of the regular areas, obviously, but his niche was often used in certain times where we needed to know things in halachas which weren't learned in the classical classical yeshivas, the classical smicha programs. But one thing which is important to mention, and obviously whenever we discuss a person, and this is true, we have to discuss it, is aside from his genius and aside from his mastery of all of Torah and his tremendous hasmada, he was well known in his community and beyond as just a tremendous, tremendous gomel chesed. His house was a wide open house. It was a home for people that had no place. He took in everyone. He didn't kick anyone out. And it was again, we could often say that the genius is something which, we're gonna envy the genius. What's the point in looking up to someone because of his genius? But in terms of that, that's certainly something which we are able to take from him. And I wanted to look into some of the halachas which really give us, not only are things which are relevant to us, but things which give us a glimpse into his derech hapsak and his personality. We will come, through reading some of these tshuvas, you will see a personality, a very firm personality, a person who believed very much, it was very in his convictions and was willing to go to battle for them. So let's take a look at the first. We're going to be discussing two basic questions tonight, and that is two questions which no doubt you've heard of. The first is the bugs in the water in New York, the copepods, which were discovered some years ago and became a big halachic shiloh. Do people in New York, are they allowed to drink the water without filtering it? That was one shiloh which Rav Belsky had a very strong opinion on. Each of these shilohs, we're not going to be able to discuss the entire tshuva and all the different aspects. They have tremendous different aspects, each of these tshuvas. Just like there's so much, so we can't go through everything, and each tshuva is pages and pages long, but we'll pick out different parts of them which I think are important. So that's one question I want to deal with. And another question, which is a different shiloh, was raised at a different time, but a lot of the issues are overlapping, so I figure we could do them together. That was a question which was raised a few years ago, more recently, and that was the question of the worms in the fish, and that they found certain fish had worms in the body, and does that make the fish treif? Does it make it usher for one to consume the fish? Rabbi Feiner told me that at the time when the issue was burning, there was a lecture in the White Shul about it. So it could be remembered from that. And he also wanted to make it clear that we're not stating any positions of the White Shul. I'm not stating his position. I told him, I rarely even say my position, let alone his position, so no one should make a mistake. Over here, we're just using this as a As again, the Gemara often says that the best way to memorialize someone is through learning his Torah. Svasasav davavos bekever. So this is a way of paying tribute to Rav Belsky, and a very interesting way, because again, it has a lot of relevance to our lives. So let's look at the Shaila. Again, the top page is the Mekoros we'll be using, but what you have is the first photocopied page, which is entitled Be'inyan Hamayim Shebe'ir, New York. Rav David Feinstein paskin this follows bikoteres psak halacha. He wrote the following tshuva: hadoreshes lisanein kol hamayim shebeir New York. No one could ingest and drink any of the water in New York b'sibah shrotzim shenimtza im sham, because of the shrotzim that are there. And he collected many different signatures from the different gedolim of our time that the water in New York is aser. Everyone has to filter the water in New York. Again, I don't know per se, every area within New York is not necessarily, it depends which reservoir the water in that community is getting their water from. Again, when I moved here, so what I heard, I didn't do too much research, I heard that Far Rockaway does have the same water source as New York City, and that Lawrence does not. I don't know if that is the case or not, but again, we're talking about New York City water. So what are the questions? So look at
I don't think it was Manhattan, it was just Brooklyn and Queens mostly.
Oh yeah? Okay, could be. Again, the mitzvahs I'm not getting involved in, we're just over here to learn the halachas, but that could be the case. Hashrotzim in paragraph which is Aleph, he's going to describe what the different problems are. Hashrotzim ha'elu shenikru kopopads, these are called kopopads. Mesim b'mayim mikamasibos, they die in the water. Ube'odam b'chayim nirim heim b'kalos ayidei tenuasim b'mayim. While they're still alive, you could see them easily. Why could I see them easily? Because they're moving around. It's much easier to see something which is moving around. So the actual bug itself would not be visual, would not be able to be seen by the eye if it were not for the fact that it was moving. But the fact that it's moving when it's alive makes it visible. That's very important detail to keep in mind. But once it dies, he argues, then you can no longer see it, or it's much harder to see because the movement is no longer there, so therefore you don't notice them. Without any magnifying glass or microscope. And even after they die, these creatures, they are tiny little white dots. Even though once they die, they don't look like bugs, they just look like white little dots. We know because of the microscope, we know what they really are, that they are type of shrotzim, these type of shrotzim which are visible when they are alive. So even though now when they're dead, they don't look like shrotzim anymore, you would barely even notice them, they still maintain that status of iser. Okay, so again, there are many different aspects to the shiloh. The tshuva goes on for pages and pages. My main intention here is to look at two specific parts of the tshuva, and that's the halachic point, and the other point is to see the personality of Rebelsi, which I think is sparkling clear through this tshuva. Let's begin with his tshuva, beginning with the word mihu on the bottom of the page. And he says as follows: it seems from what I've just presented that it's an open and closed, it was an open and shut case. It's over. You can't drink the water. Everything that they're saying seems to be true. Says Rebelsky, mihu toirahi ulil morani trachm. I know everyone seems to be against me over here, but this is Torah and I'm going to put out my best case. This is a very stringent thing. This isn't something we could just flippantly say is usher. We're going to flippantly say, oh, by the way, you can't drink any water. No, this is water. We're talking about the most basic staple of all of survival that everyone needs. You can't just usher it because we have a hunch that it's usher. If you're going to usher it, you have to be 100% sure that it's usher, he says. And he says, I'm not so sure. Ki lefi devrayim, nesru kol meimei ha'ir. They prohibited all the water of the city. Umayasu holchei drochim, omis achsim eitzel chavreim. What are people going to do? Okay, people that live there, you could say get a filter. But let's say I'm just passing through. I'm in a hotel. I'm at someone's house. I don't have my pocket filter on me, so what am I going to do? So you can say it's usher to drink water in New York. He says, I have a hard time to believe it. V'reinu zeu gedoylan. It's a big city. Yosem Yerov Medina Shemimei Kedem. This city of New York is bigger than many of the different shtetlach that we had in the old country. Have you ever heard a single community in all of Jewish history that you weren't allowed to drink the water? And don't say that they had filters, because they didn't have filters. These are new inventions of filters that we're using. The sinon she'adei beged, and the type of filter that they use wouldn't have done the trick, like we are going to explain. And the water that we're drinking, we're talking about now, is the same water in New York that people have been drinking for centuries, for decades. You go around, it looks like the same exact water as everyone else. Let's skip a little. The last line. This is a new thing that the government starts making people to filter, but it used to be people just drink normally without any filters. Next page. If what you're telling me is true, says Rebelsky, it comes out that all the Gedolei Olam that lived in New York, all the Rav Moshe Feinstein, all the different Rashi Yeshivas and Rabbanim, all the Tzaddikim, every person that lived in New York would be over Yisurim Chamurim. He says, it's hard for me to believe that such is the case. Again, he hasn't yet put forth an argument why they're wrong. He's just saying, we need to find a heter over here. To say that all the water is usher is not going to do the trick, is not acceptable. Ukvar Kosov, Moran.
Couldn't Bugs Badner do the same thing?
What?
Bugs Badner. Rabbi Badner, the same thing with the...
Okay, so we'll get to that. Let's hold off a little.
Something's new.
Okay, let's see. Let's see. He's going to put an argument up. Don't worry. This is just at the beginning. This tshuva is 20 pages long. Ukfar kosav moron rashke behag marenu harav Moshe Feinstein bigeres hakudosha in his letter. If you look at what Rav Moshe wrote, and he wrote as follows: Ve'af anachnu katne kiton, and we are small people. Yadanu zeledavra pashut. I'm not even going to write a tshuva about this. No one ever used a microscope before their meal. No one ever sat down to the table with their own little microscope. So he says the same thing would apply over here. I'm not going to accept just because of someone came up with this chiddush and viewed and saw a few things in the water, that all the water is aser. Let's turn out with an eitzah. Next paragraph. Asher alkein matzasi chova. This is the paragraph I wanted to stress. Asher alkein matzasi chova le'ayin b'chol divrei ha'achraza hanal. I viewed it an obligation upon myself to be me'ayin, to analyze every aspect of the psak halacha, ubamasho sifu oracher, and everything that was added on afterwards, ulevarer in yonim chamurim elu, ulehotzi leor mishpatim. I have to analyze this because I'm not going to, again, if it comes to the chumrah, I can't kind of kula, so then we'll have to accept it. But until then, I am going to look for a reason why this was never an issue before, why what they're paskening is is not correct, and a reason to be mekel. So you see what many people spoke about at the different hespedim that I saw printed up was his koyach dehetera. He felt this responsibility. We know koyach dehetera. Adif felt this responsibility when in perhaps a culture where people were used to tacking on chumrah after chumrah, he was always a person saying that unless we have to be machmer, unless there is a reason to be machmer, we're not just going to throw away the minog avoseinu, the things that the kulas that we've been psomich on for all the generations, flippantly. And that's something which applies to both of these piskei halacha, both the water shaila and the shaila of the fish. Now let's turn quickly to...
Doesn't it have to be a certain size?
Oh, so turn to the next page. Turn to the next page, and where this is his first defense, where he says, we can't aser every little organism. There are tons of organisms flying around. So in everywhere, there are little organisms all over the place. So at where are you going to draw the line? So just because there's some microscopic organism in your water doesn't mean it's aser. So anything microscopic is off limits. Now remember the case we're talking about over here. This is something which at the present time, you fill up your cup of water, you can't see it readily unless you know what you're looking for. You could probably see little white dots, but it certainly doesn't look like any sort of bug. The reason why they are able to know that it was bugs is because when it was alive, when this creature was alive, its movement made it clear that it was moving and it was a bug. So says in the next page that he deals with this issue clearly. He says, Bipsak in the letter that's in letter base. Bipsak ha'oser huva dehoel umechayim hayu hashrotim nirim. Since when they were alive, you could see them ayidei tenu asim because of their movement. Chal aleim iser sheret amayim. So therefore, it's called an iser sheretz. They become aser because at that point in time you could detect them with the naked eye. V'efshar lahatiram la'acher misasim. And then when they die, even though they can't be seen anymore, you can't matter them because we already asered them when we were able to see them. After hashka enam nirim rak al yedei microscope. Even though now you could only, they're microscopic, you could only detect them with a microscope. Doho v'chalem iser shuv ein nitarim akan divra varav b'taysefes biyer me'at. So the first question, the first nikudas hamachlokes between the osrim and the matirim is as follows. Something, again, Rebelsky is willing to give us, as he says clearly later on, that there's a big shiloh when something is microscopic. But he says over here, and the Ostrim are willing to agree to that also, that there are very merit mekilim when things are microscopic. If you find something, just because you had a microscope does not mean you have to be machmir. The Torah was not given to malachei hasharetz. It was given to human beings. We're not expected to have microscopes on us. So that seems to be something which everyone would be somech on. The question is over here, when you could see the thing while it was alive because of its movement, and now you can't see the thing because it's no longer moving, is that in the category of microscopic creature which I don't have to be machmir on? Or is that in the category of a creature which I could see with the naked eye? That's the question over here. Is it microscopic or not? Now, at this point in time, yes, it's microscopic. But when it was alive, it was not microscopic because of its movement. So that's the first point of dispute. Rebelsky is saying, still, loy nitna atare v'malachi asharis. What does that mean? That means if at this point in time I can't see it, I'm not an angel, I'm not expected to have a microscope, I don't have to see it, I could drink the water. If the fact that at one point in time I could have seen it, okay, if I would have filled up the water then and I would have seen it, it would be us there. Now I can't see it, now it's mutter. Whereas others say, no, you have to define the creature. If this is a creature which can be detected by the naked eye in general, it happens to be right now, since it's dead, you can't. But still, but in principle, this is a creature which could be detected, and we know it's there, so you still have to be machmer. So that's point, that's machlokes number one. Something which at the beginning of its life was not microscopic, and then for whatever reason becomes microscopic, is this something which is usher or which is not usher? That's the first part of the machlokes. But now I want to turn to...
saying that when the water reached... it saw that when the water reached here in New York,
right,
that they were abadai, not alive. No, it's,
yeah, they were saying that the overwhelming majority, I don't even know if there was a percentage not like this, but for sure the overwhelming majority, by the time it reached the sink from the reservoir, by the time, so then they had all died.
The filters would not necessarily filter microscopic things. It might be filter...
So there are many filters that these copepods wouldn't filter, but they had specific filters that did filter them. Still, you could, there, if you look on the internet, there are many different types of filters. You want to know which one filters out these copepods. Not every filter does, because what you're saying, some it's even too small. Okay, so that's issue number one. The issue I want to deal with mostly now has nothing to do with the question of microscopic or not. That's a question which is still a question, and again, it's an interesting discussion. Again, it's not the same machlokes of whether you have to be machmer and things that are microscopic. Over here, the argument is that it's not real, the creature is not really microscopic because while it's alive, you could detect it with the naked eye. But now I want to go to the next question. Again, we'll get back to the water, because there is a tzad shav. There is a common denominator between the shaila of the water and the shaila of the fish. So let's skip to the shaila of the fish. This is a much more recent problem which was discovered, and that was that they found that in many types of fish, particularly the most common one was in wild salmon. There's two types of salmon. I only learned this after this Shiloh Road. But there's farm salmon and there's wild salmon. The wild salmon had this problem that they would find these worms in the wild salmon. So the question was, does this make the fish usser? Now, why would it make the fish usser? Why would it not make the fish usser? So let's take a look at the Shiloh. And over here also, you see his personality, how upset he is that people are coming and answering, prohibiting something, just flippantly, which he thinks is the same question which had been dealt with by Poskim for generations and generations and generations. And here comes people who he, again, I remember how upset he was. I remember hearing and reading his writings at the time. More than the actual halacha, he was just very irritated by the fact that people would come in as if they discovered the America over here. He said, this is a question which has been dealt with already. The poskim already talk about it. Why are we coming and trying to bring new chumras? Those that were arguing to be machmer were saying that, no, this is a new question. This is not the same question of old. But what was the shiloh? So let's take a look at the next page. On the bottom it should say, Tuf Tes Vav, Simen Chav Gimel. I think it's two pages where the shiloh reads as follows. La'acharona also al shulchan melachim ma'malki rabbanu. The following question arose. Sha'ela is davar yashin. It's really an old question, and you can already see his take on it. No shan, it's an old question. Shekvar dashu barabim that many have dealt with already. Ve'aviro lov kol mosei kol ha'poiskim. All the poiskim have discussed this. Chadashim gam yashanim. Older poiskim and newer poiskim. Ve'horu balei teira. And everyone matters it across the board. V'kach niskabel, and everyone in Klal Yisrael had accepted this psak halakha. It's a kol gedol Yisrael. Belir urur or pikbuk. No one had argued about it. Umikar midivrei chachamein zechon v'racha, and they have good sources for it in the Gemara, as we will see. Hachel mi Gemara v'arishayne v'acharayne v'gam b'shulchan aruch v'hapoyiskim. Didarni the dachri. That's what the Gemara calls these worms. Ratzalomer tolaim hanimtzam bibasar hadagim. These worms, which are found in the flesh of the fish, mutarim ba'achila b'litzarech l'kiim tanav. They're mutter to eat. You don't have to do anything with these fish. They're 100% mutter. Let's read a little bit further. He says, "Ukvah herachnu b'zem mizeh kama shonim leva'er derech heter b'revach miu'ata lidavoneinu." It's to our dismay, kamu me'orim. There are people who are coming and arguing, chadashim, new people saying, va'also b'yoda, la'hatal ema yisera al tzibor. They're coming to be matal and ema yisera on the community, ha'medaktikim Hashem yishmireim, u'laharfis rishimos aruchos mikol mine dogim shaba'olam. And they're writing lists of all the different types of fish which are now asar, u'lahavir kol milchama b'machane, kol anois anoichi shemeya ki'ilu tishim achuz min adogim ha'necholam etzol roiv minyan v'roiv binyan shal klai. So like 90% of the fish which we generally eat, heim be'emes asurim, and they're trying to say that it's aser. Ula hosif al rishim oseyem mida yoyim b'yom, and every day they come out with a new kol koyre that more are aser. Minim chadashim le'iser adasher kim'at loy noisar lefidaita mimalekayim bo uridu b'dgas hayam, playing with off the psukim. He's saying this is crazy what people are doing. They're coming to be machmer and all the fish. It can't be. Again, there are many, many big poskim who all maintain adayam hazeh that it's still aser. We're not saying over here halacha l'maisa. I just want to give you a glimpse of his perspective. So what is this fish question? What does it go back to? Let's take a look back on the first page, the Maramakom number one, where the Gemara tells us in Meseches Chulin, Darni de Basri. Darni de Basri, that's a type of worm which is found in the flesh. Asiri, in the flesh of meat of an animal, is aser. Dechavri, but in the flesh of a fish, is sharyin. Amrele Ravina li'ime, that's permitted. Ravina says to his mother, Evla liva no eichel, cook some for me, and I'm going to eat it. So what's the difference between the worm found in the animal and the worm found in the fish? Hachi hashta, behema b'shchitahu demishtaya. Behema is permitted with shchita. Vahani, and these worms, midaloka mahani lahu shchita. Shchita doesn't work on these worms. These worms were ingested by the animal, and therefore, there's no reason for the shchita to permit the worms. The worms are still aser. Beisurayu kaiman, they maintain the same status of iser that they had always had. Aval dogim, ba fish, ba asifa, ba alma mystery. Fish don't need shchita. As long as you pick them up, it's mutter. Vahani, here's the key words. Vahani ki kagavlin, behetero kagavlin. When these literally are growing, they are growing b'heter. They're growing in a state of heter. Now, what does this mean? Take a look at Rashi in the next Marmakum. Darni, tolaim hanimtzon bein or lebasar. Worms that are found between the flesh and the skin of the animal. Kishmasitan v'heim, when you skin the animal. Next, Rashi, asiri, v'taim lefarish l'kama, dikaviri, all in Marmakum number 2, v'taim l'kibifarish ravina. So he's mattering it. Why does he matter it? So the Gemara says, Mino kagavli. Look at the last Rashi, is that I have both faced. Mino gavli, loshon gadli min habehema, as if it grows from the animal itself. Hein gedelin. Vilav sheret ha'aretzu. These are not creatures which are coming from sheret ha'aretz, which crawl around on the earth. These are creatures which kagadli from the animal, from the fish. Now, what does this mean? That's going to be the question. That's going to be the crux of the Shaila. Let's take a look at the Shulchan Aruch in our Malkum number 3, Shulchan Aruch in Simen Pei Dal, where he tells us as follows. Kol toilaim, all worms, all creatures, hanim tsoim bibehema, which are found in an animal, bein shem bein or, no matter where they are, lebasa bein shem bimeaya, asurim. If it's in the animal, it's asur. Vahanim tsoim bidogim, but that worms that are found in fish, bimeayim, if it's in the stomach of the fish ingested them, they're in the stomach of the fish, asurim. So then those worms are asur. Bein or labasar or besoicha basar, but if you find these worms in the flesh of the fish, says Shulchan Aruch, mutarim, they are mutar. So, for a long time, what was the understanding? What's the difference going on over here? Nope. The understanding was as follows. For this, again, we're talking about a time when, in time of the Rishonim, when everyone still believed in, before Louis Pasteur, spontaneous generation. So had they understand this Gemara, they said, what's the Gemara telling me? It's only aser to eat a worm if the worm came from the outside. How do I know if it came from the outside? Well, if it's in the stomach of the fish, so we could assume the fish ingested it, now we see it in the stomach of the fish. But if it's in the flesh of the fish, there's only one way it got there. It didn't get there because the fish ingested a worm. It grew from the flesh of the fish. There's a certain type of fish where the flesh itself is able to produce these worms. And therefore, that's not called sheret ha'aretz. That's called sheret dekagavli, tekagadli, from the duck. So how do I know if it's one of those types of worms? Well, if it's in the stomach, I don't know. But if it's in the flesh, the only way it would get into the flesh is if it, that's where it was produced to begin with. Yeah, but this isn't that either. This would be, sheret ha'yam is not referring to, these would be referring to sheret ha'aretz. Sheret ha'yam is talking about certain types of fish. But anyways, we wouldn't consider the sheret ha'yam because this, we're arguing, comes from the fish itself. It's not from the water, it's not from the earth, it's in the fish itself. So that was the understanding. So the question we have now, which is a very general question, and a question that I don't want to get into right now, but it's an important question, perhaps a different time, is what do we do in these types of scenarios? A question which books and books and books have been written on. Scenarios where the Gemara seems, or at least the way the Rishonim understood the Gemara, they seem to have been understanding the Gemara based on the science of their time. And the science of our time tells us something different. Again, the Gemara itself, there are many different ways to learn the Gemara. In every scenario we're going to look at, there are different ways to learn Gemara. So I'm not getting involved in what the Gemara meant, what Chazal meant, or that's not the question over here. But let's say the way that the Gemara was clearly understood was assuming a certain scientific principle of spontaneous generation. Now we assume that spontaneous generation doesn't exist. So what do you do in these scenarios? So where does this question really come to a head? The question, the most basic area, Gemara, where this question is raised is, anyone familiar with the sugya? The halacha is, you're allowed to kill a kina on Shabbos. Ha-hoyre kina b'Shabbos is potter. Why is ha-hoyre kina b'Shabbos and potter? So let's take a look at the Gemara, Mar Makom number 4. Ushar shkotzim, ha-horga and chayiv, if you kill them, you're chayiv. My tana, am Rabbi Yirmiyah, Rabbi Lazar hit, the tana, Rabbi Lazar, oimeh, ha-horga, kina b'Shabbos, you kill kina on Shabbos, ke-horga gomel. It's as if you killed a regular, full-fledged animal. That's the sheet of Rabbi Lazar. The chachamim disagree. Maskif la Rabbi Yosef, ad kan lo pligi rabbana. What? Oh, sorry. Adkan lo pligi, Marmakon number 4. Adkan lo pligi rabbanon aled Rabbi Eliezer. The rabbanon only disagree with Rabbi Eliezer. Ela bikina, when it comes to this type of lice. De'ena perei ureve. Again, de'ena perei ureve could be understood in many different ways. Many people had understood it for many years that it spontaneously generates, right? De'ena perei ureve, it doesn't come from a zachar unekeva. De'ena perei ureve comes from something else. Spontaneous generation. So why could you kill a kina on Shabbos? Because the regular any animal or any creature which does not have the regular form of reproduction from a zachar and a nekeva, it spontaneously generates. So then we assume that it's not a real alpidin, it's not a real creature, and therefore you could kill it on Shabbos because it's not as if you are taking a life. That is the halacha of, that's the machlokes. Rabbi Elazar disagrees, because Rabbi Elazar says, we don't care how it regenerates, we don't care how it reproduces, we care about if it's a living organism, it's also to kill. If it's not a living organism, so then you could kill it. But at the end of the day, the reason why the Rabbanan say it's mutter to, or at least it's not chayiv if you kill a kina on Shabbos, is because, according to many Rishonim, if you take a look in the Ramban, Mar Malkum number 6, what does the Ramban tell us? Yesh omer shehu min hayadua hahoive min ha'afar. What are we talking about over here? We're talking about a min which is created from the dirt itself. The kina, the Ramban's going to go on to say, is created from the person's scalp itself. Somehow it spontaneously generates. That's how the Rishonim were understanding it. So if that's the reason why it's mutter to kill it, and now we know the science tells us that that's not the case. It doesn't spontaneously generate. So what happens to the halacha? Do we change the halacha? Does the halacha stay the same? Do we ignore the science? What do we do? So many, many, many different shitas on this. Again, there are those that say that the Rishonim Chazal and the Rishonim tell us that there's such a thing as spontaneous generation. That's what we assume. We're not going to assume anything different. There are those that say, even if science tells us that such a thing doesn't exist, bizman azeh, we assume that such a thing did once exist. So if that's the case, what we see nowadays is not that, and therefore you would have to be machmer, because obviously what we have nowadays is not what they are talking about. There are others that say, we recognize that science now is telling us different facts than science told them then. But since the halacha was stated based and was accepted and was nikva, instituted based on their science, so halacha stays the same. Halacha is not dynamic in that sense. If that's how we paskin, that's how we paskin. We're not going to change it because of scientific, because the science world has taught us a different set of facts. But then there are those that will always try to say that the Gemara is not really a stira, is not really a contradiction to what science is telling us now, and that they are really consistent. And this was the approach that Rebelsky often took. This is the approach he took in both of these scenarios. And he tried to show that the Gemara, in both of these situations, never really meant to talk about spontaneous generation, was never really assuming anything about spontaneous generation. Whether they knew spontaneous generation was not true or not, doesn't make a difference, said Rebelsky. He said, it doesn't make a difference. That was the science of the time. Did they know differently? Did they not know differently? We could argue about it from today until tomorrow, but it doesn't make a difference because the halacha was not assuming that. This whole discussion comes on the assumption that the halacha was decided because these creatures spontaneously generate. Now that we know that that's not true, so what do we do? But says Rebelsky, that's not the case at all. That you're misunderstanding what Chazal were assuming. So let's take a look at what he says. Skip to the page on the bottom that says Tuf Yud Tes. The first page that has a blue sticker. Next to the blue sticker where I have bracketed off, where he writes as follows. Val Karchach Kidivarenu. Again, a lengthy, lengthy tshuva discussing many different facets of the question, but he says as follows. This is one of his concluding remarks. Val Karchach Kidivarenu. What we're saying must be true. Sharak Tola'a Sha'amru Alea Dmine Kagavli Yesh Bakoach Li'ikones Ulotzes. This worm that they are saying, Dimine kagavli, that Chazal say are permitted to eat because it came from the fish itself. Those are the worms that you find in the flesh. If you find it in the flesh, that means by definition, it's one of these worms which came from the flesh itself. Now, again, nowadays we know there's no such thing as spontaneous generation. We know that no worms come from the flesh itself. In fact, scientists know exactly how the worms get there. You go through the whole process. Rebelsky goes through it in great detail in this tshuva. Basically, the fish swallows a smaller fish, and inside the stomach of the smaller fish are small, little, tiny, microscopic either eggs or microscopic bugs, which will turn into worms. And then they're able to penetrate. Some of them stay in the stomach, and some of them penetrate into the flesh. So the ones that wanted to be machmer, what are they saying? The worms that, what was the Shulchan Aruch's defining line? What was his line? How do I know whether it's mutter or aser? If it's in the stomach, it's aser because it came from the outside. If it's in the flesh, it's mutter because it came from the fish itself. But now that the scientists are telling us that all the worms come from the outside, some of them are able to penetrate into the flesh, some are stay in the stomach. Okay, but at the end of the day, we know that all of them are coming from the outside. So how could you be makel? The only reason the Gemara said you could be makel on some worms is because we assume it came from the fish itself. It wasn't coming from the outside. But now we know that they all come from the outside. Even the ones in the flesh originally came from the outside and just penetrated the wall, were able to get in, and therefore that's why they're in the flesh now. But they originated outside the fish. So really, we should say they're all aser. And that was the opinion of all the poskim that wanted it to be machmer. Comes with Belsky and says, no. I agree with you. They all come from the outside. But there are certain worms that are what we would call minei kagavli in the Lashon of the Gemara, and there's certain worms which are not minei kagavli. What's the definition of minei kagavli? It's not that there was spontaneous generation. They were able to produce from the flesh of its fish itself. What minei kagavli means is that most of its growth happened inside the flesh of the fish. That the nutrients it got, the growth that the animal, the worm became from a little microscopic organism into a worm, that occurred in the flesh of the fish. Minei kagavli doesn't mean that the whole thing generated the birth of this worm. No, we know worms don't come from the flesh itself. But what it means is that when it entered the flesh of the fish, it was a tiny little microscopic thing, and it was the nutrients of the flesh of the fish, it was the flesh of the fish which allowed it, which fostered its growth. Therefore, we say minei kagavli, it grew from the fish itself. And that's what he says over here. What?
Isn't it a beria?
Isn't it a
beria?
Beria. Well, we're saying over here that it's a mutter beria.
No, beria is not bottle.
No, beria is only if you have a beria which is usser, so then it's not bottle.
Well, the beria is usser when it starts.
Only if it's an usser beria. If it's an usser beria.
These shadows came in. So
what?
Beria.
Oh, so then he's saying at that point it was still microscopic. When the point in time where it comes into, it turns into a sheretz, it's already minei kagavli, it's growing from the fish itself.
When it comes into the body?
That's exactly what it says. Let's take a look. V'akorcha kidvareinu, sherak tola, ulefiya hezber hanal, af shetola'im shebibnei hame'ayim asurim misafe, mikomakam knisasam levasar, havigili milsa, shelo neser tolazume oilam. This tolaz, this worm, was never usher to begin with. The kavanas chazal beomre minei kagavli. And what do chazal mean when they say minei kagavli? Hu kemosha perish Rashi, like Rashi says over there, sheminei gadli, shenizgadel bisoy chadag, that it turned into a beria, it turned into a, from, went from a microscopic, from an egg, microscopic egg, into a creature in the fish. That it grew inside the dog. So what he's arguing is as follows. He's saying that yes, the Shulchan Aruch was, the Chazal were correct, the Shulchan Aruch was correct. We originally were understanding, and those that are machmer, how are they understanding? They're saying, if you find, what was the Gemara saying? If you find the worms in the stomach of the fish, you assume it came from the outside. If it came from the flesh, if you find it in the flesh of this fish, you assume it grew from the flesh of the fish. So what do we do nowadays? Now we know that everything came from the outside. So they say, you have to say that they're all usser. Comes Rebelsky and says, no. Just because we know that they all came from the outside, there's still different types of worms. Some worms grow, even though they came, the egg or the microscopic organism may have came from the outside originally, but most of its growth happened inside the fish. And since most of its growth happened inside the fish, it alpidin, it's the turned into a sheretz inside the fish, and therefore we'll make them. Now how do we know which ones most of its growth happened in the fish and which ones most of its growth happened outside of the fish? He says, well, it depends where it is. If it's in the stomach, so then you don't know. You have to assume that it grew outside and was ingested. But if it's in the flesh, so then that's the Chazal's way of telling you that when it came in, it was a tiny little thing, and it really grew inside the fish, and that's why it was able to penetrate the walls. Again, the tremendous chiddush over here being that mineka gavli doesn't mean that anyone ever thought that there was any animal, which any creature was spontaneously generated, and that's what Chazal were talking about. But since that's not the worm we're talking about, we have to say it's aser. No, mineka gavli means that it grew inside the fish. It did most of its growth, most of its life cycle happened within the fish. And the same argument he makes at one point in the tshuva when it comes to the copepods as well. Because there's a very similar halacha when it comes to water. That if this creature was created by the water, inside the water, so then you don't have to be nervous, it's not considered a sheretz, because it's considered part of the water. Again, Rebelsky says when it comes to water, it's a little bit more complicated, but he makes a very similar argument. And he says that, so you'll argue that these things don't spontaneously generate, they don't come from the water. We know that's not true. So they have to be aser. Said Rebelsky, no, you're misunderstanding. Chazal weren't saying that they have to be spontaneously generated for them to be mutter. It has to happen that most of its growth, when it turns from a microscopic organism into an organism that we could detect, that happened either in the fish, and therefore it's mutter because it grew from the fish. Yes, you could tell me scientifically it didn't grow from the fish. But alpidin, it grew from the fish because most of its growth happened inside the fish. Alpidin, it grew from the water because most of its growth happened already when it was inside the water. Therefore, based on these arguments, he came out very, very adamantly halacha l'maisa that it's mutter. He even said that he goes even further and says that a person is making it worse for himself if he gets a filter. He tries to explain why getting a filter is worse. And alpidin, a person shouldn't get a filter. But again, many, many different shitas halacha. Every poysik has their own approach, but this is his approach to find a way that minig yisrael tayrahi, if we're following, this is the standard halacha that Klal Yisrael have been keeping for generations. We are going to find a way, the reason why it is mutter, and that was his approach in these two scenarios.